Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson of Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive, and AM 1570, and we're on the YouTube and the LinkedIn and the Facebook and the Twitter and the Instagram, and we're bringing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out to my peninsula. We've lost the Key Bridge. We've been talking at length about that and what it's going to do to my community down in the peninsula and Sparrows Point, and that whole area. And there's some fundraisers going on there. Key Brewing and Tiki Lee's did theirs. I'll be at Costas on the 9th. The Red Sox are playing the Orioles at 2 p.m. I was doing this when the bridge was still standing, and I put this idea together back in February because I'm like, it's April 9th. It's a road game. It's afternoon. It's perfect for beer and crab cakes and all the good stuff that I love at Costas, including giving away some lottery tickets as well. So we're going to be there on the 9th, and then we're going to be at Fadley's on the 12th next Friday. Every Friday before Oriole home games, we will be live at Fadley's from 2 until 5. And I mean live. I mean, like, if I got to pee, I got to go a long way, I think. I just went to the new Fadley's. Delicious, new, shiny, block closer to Oriole Park at Camden Yards. I will be there at 2 p.m. with Luke Jones. Luke will be joining me from 2 until 3 live each and every Friday that there's a home game, which will make it more fun for us, I guess, until Luke gets sick of me. But, you know, it's hard to get sick of winning baseball and the new and fresh Orioles. And other than Luke, I can't think of anyone that I would rather be chatting with today. And I did, you know, this is not an April Fool's joke. It's not a gig, even though we're recording this on April Fool's Day. There's new ownership. There's been a passing. The torch has been passed. There is no John Angelos. There is no Angelos. Although, I must say, I saw T.J. Brightman on opening day. I saw Lucasaurus running around in a suit. I saw George Stamos. I saw all of the Angelos family people on opening day. But I also saw all four new dudes in 24 jerseys. One of which I actually met. I met Michael Arrighetti. That's all I'm going to say about meeting Michael Arrighetti at this point. But Alan McCallum is here. Alan McCallum, if history serves me correctly, joined me sometime in the Cal Ripken run of 1995 after the strike that I endured with the help of Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch, and the Winter Distributing Company in 1994 and 95. And George Acton and John Dow, who kept me alive and fed with a 10-year-old kid. I'm doing the 25th anniversary documentary of WNST and now 40 years of media. Alan McCallum, we freed the birds. I don't want to bring Martin Luther King into this, you know, but I want to bring Free the Birds into this and say we at least freed the birds. They're freed. And like, on opening day, a man in a suit, it was almost like the Willy Wonka Slugworth thing. A dude came to me, and we went for a little walk in the club level, and he says, I work for Mr. Rubenstein. I've heard you've had some complications. And, I have not opened the bottle of wine that I told you about 2 months ago, The Prisoner. I haven't opened that because I don't have my press credential back. I've decided I'm going to save that for my press credential. But nonetheless, how are you? Happy New Year. I know you've had all sorts of family things and weird stuff going on, but you got to be pleased with the Orioles. This has got to be the best part of your life, Alan, at this point, right?
It was late July, early August of 95 that we met, Nestor, and less than a month after that, I was on the field for you for the first time. So we're just shy of 30 years coming up.
And Peter Angelos owned the team the whole time. I didn't know you before he owned it, even though I was on the radio before that.
That is correct. And I, in that time, and probably sometime much beyond it, I can't think of a moment for the Baltimore Orioles that was more exciting, potentially prosperous, and the view of prosperity looks to be bright for the foreseeable future. I can't think of a moment in time that has been stronger than this for the franchise, at least not in my lifetime. I obviously am aware of the greatness of the Orioles from the late 60s into the 70s. I was a kid. I was born in 72, so I was a kid during the beginning of that. But in my adult lifetime, there has never been a moment like this at all. And if you're not optimistic and excited about the possibilities for the future, I don't know what else you could ask for.
You covered the team for the better part of a decade and a half around here. You were here for the first radio station, the time we got it back, all of the stories of glory you've witnessed, even though you're not a football fan much at all. You know, you've been here to witness what the city, how it's changed in a lot of ways and in all sorts of ways. Cause you've lived here, you're West Side, I'm East Side. We always met somewhere right around Towson. Right. Never with cheese. Don't give Alan any. Alan does not eat pizza, not normal pizza like normal people like we eat.
Cheeseless pizza.
You're such a weird cat. That's all I can. But you love Sting and we love music and all that stuff. What excites you the most? Like where write me the Alan McCallum essay. If I was here bugging you on a daily basis, taking phone calls, I mean, I don't even know where to begin. And I'm definitely having some really surreal battles with this. You know what I mean? With just all of it, just, you know, it all feels like it's going to be different. It's not different yet. It's getting there. Certainly what we're seeing on the field is exactly what you want to see.
I mean, honestly, what excites me most would be Mike Elias and Sigma Dahl. The idea that we have management in place that clearly knows what they're doing. They've done it before. They apprenticed in other places, and now they're in the lead with the reins off, so to speak, to do what they want. And so much of what they've done so far has really brought back nothing but positive returns. That is a really wonderful thing to know. You have management in place. Look, players come and go, injuries happen. The greatest play, Adley Rutschman, and I'm certainly not hoping this happens, could get collided with it at home plate tomorrow, and his career will never be the same. I mean, those things happen. But to have management in place that is intelligent, forward thinking, and seems to have a plan is really amazing. Now we have new ownership. I'm certainly optimistic about David Rubenstein, but none of us knows what his stewardship of the team is going to look like.
I'm not convinced he knows, because I'm not convinced he knows enough to know enough. Like, and wherever the level of immersion would be, that who's going to be doing the hiring search for whomever's going to do whatever, because they certainly did not instill that day one. And as Luke predicted, that they would just play this out and just feel everything out. And I don't know that that's a great circumstance. I mean, I'm all for preaching patience and understanding and all of that stuff. But I just feel like there's some fundamental issues with the people that John Angelos employed on the baseball side were one thing. The people on the business side, I just see a lot of empty seats still. And $9 tickets now, and the different philosophy of trying to get people to the ballpark, and just literally, dude, communicating, right? I'm a communications person. I'm a communications specialist. I'd say I've communicated better than most anybody, because I've been in the communication business for 32 years doing this. And I have real clear, concise communication and honest communication. And my communication comes with integrity and with a backbone and with like all of that. I have a history of all that. Rubenstein didn't have any of that. He has no history of communication here. Like, he's new onto the boat. The Angelos thing was 3 decades of the worst kind of communication, and the people in front of it who did never communicate it. They dictated, they mandated, there was an arrogance. I mean, the loss of business, the loss of fans, the loss of season ticket. We can go down the list of all of that, right? That's all true. And it all rears its head in the second game, where there's 30,000 empty seats again. And the possibilities, all right, what are you going to do to get the momentum back? And I know it's not all about filling the seats, but I mean, Luke went nuts as we started talking business about the streaming side of things and about how much for my cable bill, how much for RSM, what's the massive Absolutely. Plan. That's question one from Luke. Now that's wild, because Luke would say, you go sit with Sashi Brown last week down in Florida. You ask him about the $600 million. But I have more questions for David Rubenstein that he should want to answer, and do it concisely and clearly with good questions and long answers and ideas for the $600 million, for baseball development, for, hey, Rutschman, Henderson, money, Burns. Burns is out there looking like an ace. Rodriguez looking like an ace. I spent the morning talking about the the Atlanta Braves and Glavine and Smoltz and Maddux and like keeping that kind of pitching around when you have that kind of pitching. And we're two games into it, right? I mean, we're one time through the rotation. But boy, there's a lot to answer here and a lot to speak of. I mean, at Jana Marie Smith, I'm talking about painting the stadium down in Sarasota because it's falling apart after 15 years. There's a lot of things that are going to cost money that John has let atrophy. To your point, the lead story is Elias, Mydell, and the baseball bunch. They're going to win games. Now, how do we win the hearts of getting people back and getting whatever spirit was broken and trust that was broken with the Angelos family, with everybody? How does that return and be wrapped real nice in an orange wrapper?
So, obviously, there's a ton there. All of it's valid. And let's be clear. His management group has owned the team and run the team for less than a week. So
there's no doubt about it.
So let him take a breath and sort of assess the situation. I'm never a fan of management that comes in and makes sweeping changes without even looking over the landscape. I like to see people that come in, look around, see what works, see what doesn't work. And look, it's like any presidential regime, right? You can't take everybody out of position instantly. There needs to be a steady transition so that the jobs continue to be done. So that's part one. The other part, and we've talked about this before, that the cities since COVID, the process of how people exist within them has changed. People don't work in cities the same way they used to. So there isn't the same population that's like, I'm 10 minutes from the ballpark. Let me walk down after work, meet some friends, have a beer.
Or the businessman special where downtown was loaded with 100,000 people and you're trying to get 10,000 of them to play hooky on a nice day and come eat peanuts.
Exactly. So much of that doesn't exist anymore. The infrastructure, the human infrastructure is different. So this isn't an Oriole problem. This is a major sports franchise problem. How do you get people down to the city in those situations? And then you, Luke, are absolutely right. I mean, I haven't had a cable subscription in 6 years. And whether I have an MLB package or what have you, I have streaming services that give me basically anything I can want from cable except Masson, and that we live in a streaming age when you can get anything in terms of entertainment, and it is like breaking into Fort Knox to get the Orioles on your home screen unless you're willing to pay ridiculous amounts of money to a cable company. That cable companies that are basically antiquated at this point is mind-boggling to me. And again, that's a Major League Baseball issue. The regional sports networks, I mean, so much of what the offseason was were 7 to 10 teams in the sport having to deal with the potential bankruptcy of their various regional networks and how that was going to impact them being able to spend money on players. I mean, Texas, Minnesota, San Diego, these are all teams that have been contenders. Texas Rangers are the world champions. They didn't know what kind of money they had to spend because they didn't know what their sports franchise.
Welcome to the Washington Nationals world for 18 years.
I'm sorry, Nestor. I don't want to hear that. When the Nationals came here, it was agreed to that the Orioles would have control over Masson, and that for the last decade they've been fighting about this. Is just it's. We disagree about this. Major League Baseball made an agreement with the Orioles, and they've been trying to break it for the last decade, which to me is bad faith. But ultimately, what Washington has and Baltimore doesn't have is access to the wealthiest part of the region in Northern Virginia and D.C. And the Orioles had access to that for 30 years, 40 years before the Nationals came back. So there was a reason for how that got distributed the way it was. Ultimately, David Rubenstein has a huge amount of and his group have a huge amount of issues to tackle. Some that are sports related, some that are city and state related, and some that are just in terms of communication, in terms of broadcasting. Those are huge issues that need to be addressed and decided upon.
Well, there's several businesses here above and beyond winning baseball games. You know, there's local business, there's national business, there's a cable business. There's just, I mean, just the food in the ballpark, the Sarasota experience, the gambling thing, the city and the land thing, the game experience and pregame experience, like all of that. And really trying to deodorize 30 years of really, really lousy everything. Lousy ownership, lousy messaging, lousy baseball, lousy community service, like just lousy. And it's my letter to him is real simple. Like, it's not hard to do better. I mean, really, it's really going to be easy to do better, but don't let that stop you from doing your best, because we all want this to be great. And I told his representative that on opening day. I said, I own a thing called Baltimore Positive. I live here. Ask anybody that knows me. My challenge was always that I wanted it to be better, and I became the complaint department. Our radio station, 481-1570, became the place to call and complain about whatever you were pissed off about with the Orioles, because they didn't take your complaint call. They said there are no complaints. Sit down and shut up. And
by the way, with all of this, the Orioles are arguably the best young franchise in the sport, and almost everyone has predicted them to win the AL East.
There's so many reasons to come and engage with the team right now. There really are.
Well, I mean, watching them, they lost the last game. But watching them at their height in those first two games was really eye-opening in terms of what the potential for this club can be. No, they're not going to score 11 or 12 runs every night. I don't think anybody's expecting that. But to see how they click, to see the confidence – and how they execute well 98% of the time. Those things are, that's where you build. And if there's anything to build around, I mean, I've said this basically as long as I've known you, the only way to be a good owner of a franchise is to spend money, hire good people, and get the heck out of the way. And he's already got the people. Whether he spends the money and gets out of the way and does the business side, which he says what he's planning to do, I mean, that, if he sticks to that, then in theory, everything should be fine. But yes, there's a lot of work. And ultimately, you have to climb the hill to be the best. And the Orioles look to be capable of climbing that hill, but they have to do it.
I keep marrying the business side to the baseball side and saying they're all geniuses until you have to pay them market rate. And that's what changed here in the 70s with Jerry Hofberger, who would have loved to have kept Bobby Grich and Doug DeSensei and Reggie Jackson and down the line, right? Couldn't pay them. Into the 90s, we were the team for 5 minutes when Peter bought the team, and it was delivered with 3.5 million people in it and skyboxes that were sold before he effed it all up and before he got Albert Bell, like on, and the steroid era and like all that happened during his watch, that first, the last half of the first 10 years from 96 to 01, we watch them play themselves into a small market, play themselves into 20 years later. You think that Major League Baseball was screwing him when the whole thing was terrible. But to Peter's credit, his son got $1.7 billion last week out of the deal, out of the transaction. Yeah. So Peter won, right? The Angelos family won. And they still
– what they paid. 10 times what they paid.
The first thing that Rubenstein said is, I got to fix Masson. And so the only thing that made the thing profitable for them that they soaked in was that cable television money for two decades. And it's still not even sorted out. So, but I would say to you that all of this growth happens when those seats get full and when sponsorships get sold. I mean, I'll continue to say that you could play the poor little Baltimore angle and DC has more money and what we don't know what we're going to do with our Masson and like all of that. At some point, more people here, you, me, people who love baseball, ask me how much money I gave the Angelos family since 2006. Seriously. I mean, like less than $500, and I'm talking about buying playoff tickets. Like, I didn't, I never ever gave them money. I never spent money. I never went in there. You know how bad it was, Alan? Honest to God, Chris Pyka offered to transfer me a ticket on opening day. His wife took ill. Kate, I hope you're doing better. And I said, sure. And he said, send me your Major League Baseball login. And I'm like, I haven't bought a baseball ticket since 2015 that I'm aware of when I went on tour and I did 30 ballparks in 30 days. I bought some tickets, but I even bought those on the street. You know, just give me, I bought a ticket for a dollar in Colorado. Literally, I paid a dollar. I went in. But I don't have an account. I've never bird landed. I get their emails, but I've never done any of that. And then I bought a ticket on SeatGeek for $40 at 2:30 on opening day, right? And I walked up and I couldn't get the ticket to work because they don't have the Wi-Fi right. You can't download anything at the stadium during the game. 5 minutes before the, like, I'm trying to get my ticket and I got no Wi-Fi, right?
Yeah, you need a network. You need the network down there.
So that doesn't work. So I went up to the gate and the nice man, Scott, was beautiful. He printed my ticket for me, looked me up, and I'm like, I can't get the Wi-Fi to get my ticket. This is an operations nightmare. Imagine if there were more people there that couldn't get in. So I'm just saying, but they were nice to me, let me in. But these are issues that, like, the Ravens had this problem. I couldn't tweet from my seats for years because they didn't have enough horsepower to make my Wi-Fi work, which is why my wife's in the other room engineering at this point and trying to make all that stuff work. But the notion that, like, I don't even have an account to have a ticket, they should want me to have an orange club. My wife and I love baseball. We've loved baseball our whole lives. My family, my cousin's in the Hall of Fame. I did 30 ballparks. I am a prime person that they should be trying, not just that, but social influencer, all the other stuff that you'll find out about in the documentary, because no one listens, Alan. Everyone hears. But nonetheless, I'm a person that should at least have an account, and I have a Royal Farms account. I just got some free chicken the other day. I had my points. My wife was pissed. She had 400 points on Wise Markets on the rewards. We didn't get the ham. So I don't know what we should have gotten the ham. So, like, I'm telling you, I'm a Marriott rewards. I'm Southwest. I booked points today to go out to Vegas. So, like, I am a rewards member. Give me a club and let me join because I love orange and black, and Peter doesn't own the team anymore. I'm ready to come back, Mr. Rubenstein. I'm ready to come back, TJ Brightman. I told him that. I saw him. I'm ready to come back and be a part of this, but I got to be a media member. That's number one, because I am, and I've earned the right to be there. And if you're transparent, you should want somebody there asking me what you're doing with the $600 million, what the plan is for Sarasota, what the plan is for streaming, how you're going to unravel Masson. And also, I can go over and ask Mike Elias, you know, who he's going to trade for at the trade. I can do all of that, but there should be more people holding them accountable, because this is how you're going to change the city. You're going to change the city by being held accountable by people like me who love the city. And are going to ask questions, and you're going to be a right guy, and you're going to stand up, and you're going to say, I didn't buy this team just to win a championship and to make money and to sell it for $3 billion. Although that's nice, but we have to build it in order to sell it for $3 billion. We need to get more people here and make more money. But the real story, Alan, and I'm going to beat you and everybody up about this is how Rutschman gets signed. This is how the payroll goes from $75 million to $200 million 4 years from now, is when there aren't 11,000 people on a sleepy Sunday on Easter. And my wife's like, it's Easter. You can't expect anybody to be there. Well, it's Easter. You could expect people to be there. Like, you know, maybe you could get 35,000 there. I don't know. But, like, they need to sell tickets. They need to sell sponsorships. They need me to have a Major League Baseball thing, and you too. And they need everybody in on buying gear, buying stuff, going to the ballpark, spending money, buying sponsorships, having love for them. Like, they need that in order to afford Jackson Holiday. They do. They really do.
So let's talk about this. Yes, you want to sign your players, but you also have to be smart about it. And, you know, when I started working for you, a long-term contract for a great player was 5 to 6 years for
$30 million, Cal.
But by that time it's probably $75 million, and it has I remember, and I'm going to sound old. Let me come, Sonny. Let's pull up to the fire. I'll in my rocking chair while I tell you the story.
We used to be young, man. We were young. I swear we were.
I know. I remember
when Alomar hit the home run in Cleveland. We were young. When Jeffrey Mayer stole the ball and we were sitting together in 96, it was 28 years ago.
I was 24 years old, yes. But I remember reading in the newspaper, in the Baltimore Sun, someone had written an article, who's going to be the first $10 million a year player? And they were speculating that it was going to be Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, I remember that. And now there are players that are getting $700 million on paper, at least. A guy who I'm sure is going to be a great pitcher who had never thrown a pitch in Major League Baseball got $300 million. I mean, the money is outrageous. So you have to ask yourself the question, and we've seen it maybe for the first time in this offseason with the Boris Four, these quality players who couldn't get contracts, not because they haven't had good seasons, but because they were inconsistent to various degrees. I don't want to give this person that kind of money for that kind of time because I'm not certain that they're going to be what I'm paying for. And it was easier to do it when it was $100 million for a contract. And now that it's approaching $500 million for above average players, not great players, but above average players. A smart franchise is not the one that's just throwing money around. I'm not saying that the players we have aren't going to be great, but I am asking the question, do you give 10 years to Adley Rutschman as a catcher, which is arguably the most volatile position other than pitcher on the field, where you could get run over and your career ends? Do you give a 10-year contract to a pitcher? I know I wouldn't.
Well, the Royals just gave $288 million to Bobby Witt, right? Like, you know, so – and they don't have any money, right?
So Bobby Witt, Gunnar Henderson, Jackson Holliday, those are players that you arguably take a risk on. It makes sense to sign a player like that when they're young before the money goes up. Totally on board with that.
My point is the money has to come from somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not that you don't make any decisions. It's not that you throw them away. It's about making the decision about who you want to – who is the smart bet. You always have to have risk. I've heard a lot of analysts talk about how risk-averse the Orioles have been through the Angelos era, and there's no question that's true. You have to take risks to be successful. I think any business person, any owner of a sports franchise, any general manager will tell you that. The question is, who do you take risks on? I don't think you sign a veteran guy entering his 30s in a non-steroid era, arguably, to a 10-year contract because the returns will be diminishing. And even if you do deferred contracts, that means you're going to be stuck like the Orioles are with Chris Davis, like the Mets are with Bobby Bonilla, paying these guys into their
the Mets are three owners deep into this, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you're it's about making the smart bet, making the smart risk, and deciding what you're going to do.
Well, the whole thing's a mess when they're playing baseball games in Oakland still after what they did with Montreal and San Jose. Like, they never learned their lesson. They always have a black eye of some kind in some way. And then the Ohtani gambling thing, which, I mean, we're 30 minutes into this. We haven't even brought that up, that thing would have come here had he been an Angel this week, right? And it isn't, but it is. And I had Janet Marie on out in L.A., and I'm like, what am I going to ask you about that? Because, like, what do we know? Like, and now they're going to build a new stadium too, right, in L.A. Like, so there's all sorts of things going on in the baseball side of things that have nothing to do with the tectonic plates here, and yet we have so much to focus on here with the new owner that will affect all of that and all of that revenue. As you pointed out, none of these teams know where all this cable money that has funded all of this, literally that and $15 beers and your gambling money and skybox money and new stadiums and free rent. All of that is how the salaries got from Cal Ripken making $6 million to Ohtani making $60 million, right? Like, that's what happened. But it's coming out of our pockets, and at some point, if they want to grow the revenue here, The new owners are going to grow the revenue. That is going to have to come from a local source. A lot of local sources, a lot of people, a lot of businesses that fork over a lot of money and then feel that value. Feel the Absolutely. Value of the investment of their time, love, loyalty, money, etc.
If the Orioles could find a way to take Masson and put it on an app and say, don't worry about cable, buy this app monthly, annually, what have you.
It would not make enough money to fund Adley Rutschman's valet. It wouldn't fund his translator. That's what I'm telling you, dude. Like, if there's 100,000 people that are willing to give them $200 a year, do the math on that, and that's the number. Whatever that number is, that's the number. It's not little old lady lives in a cottage who doesn't know what baseball is going to be giving us $36 a year. Right. And we're going to have 400,000 of those. That's all gone.
The companies that come to you to advertise on that app is what's going to fund everything you're talking about. I mean, look.
Is that restricted like the Baltimore Banner where like their stories are there and nobody can read them and there's a paywall? Because that's a different kind of advertiser.
I will tell you this. Having worked in the nonprofit arts my entire adult career,
in your world, they ask for money philanthropically, period.
But the point is that the cost of a ticket alone does not fund the events.
Well, yes. I mean, you're in an industry of GoFundMe. And baseball's been in an industry of the cable TV will fund us, and the city will fund us, and the state will fund us, and everybody will give us money. But then the customer has to come out and get these payrolls with beer money and people that make you the Giants and not the A's. I mean, that's pretty dramatic, but that's true.
Right. It's an equation that neither you or I are going to solve right now. But yeah,
that David Rubenstein just bought in for $1.7 billion that I could have a seat at the table and be pretty smart about. And also saying, be really dumb about, like, I don't know how this is going to work, but I know you better get me in the club, because if I don't buy any of it, if I don't have the games on my television, it's the same thing I said to Chris Corman from the Banner. If I don't have your product and don't have access to your product and you put up the, it's going to cost me $2.50 to ride it, I'm either going to pay it maybe or not. Peacock, right, when the playoff game was on. And, you know, from Luke's perspective, look, My wife is a Verizon employee. We have Verizon cable television, so I have Verizon. I have 500 billion channels. I talk to my remote. It doesn't listen to me. I don't watch a whole lot of TV. You know this. I'm not a movie guy. We've been through this with you, me, and Max Weiss. So, but all that being said, I have the games. But if I didn't, and I had to start over again, and I moved to a cottage in Ellicott City, and I said, I want the games, and my wife's not choosing cable television, how would I get the games? I'd be pretty pissed off if I had them 5 days a week, and then they flip me the bird on this Peacock that I have to get on Friday, and then I got to get the Apple sticky stick, and then I got to get the Amazon sticky stick, and then I got to worry about the Paramounts and the Disneys. And like all of this stuff to me, I'm just vomiting on you right now, Alan, because I don't even know what any of it means, because I'm not buying any of it. Netflix, I don't have any of it. I don't have Apple Music. I don't have Spotify. I don't have any of it. Any of it. I'm 55, and I know I'm not hip anymore because I was at Air Supply last week, okay? And a Little River Band, so I know I'm not hip, all right? I mean, I went to a symphony last month with Sting, so I know I'm not hip. But I do know they better figure it out. It's all white people. It's all old white people. It was that I walked around Fort Myers. I mean, it's what it is. And they better figure it out, because whatever the plan is, now that Angelos is gone, if I get my press credential back and people are nice to me, I want to understand it for everyone like me. Because I really do think the model 5 or 10 years from now is going to be, oh, you're an Oriole fan. Are you a $500 Oriole fan, or you $1,000? What club are you in? It's like the Maryland club. And if you want the games on TV, it's a minimum $500 a year thing. But you get a shirt, you get a hat, you get a flight deck seat to come down to a game, and you get a that, and you get a this or that or that, and you get flight points. And when I'm there, Chris Pika was bragging about his points at the game the other day that he got he had never had an Ekeban neighborhood bird. He got one at the stadium, delicious, local. Squires is there now. We got local people. And he got, like he said, I got this in a beer for $13 because I'm a man. I got a 25% off Birdland Dreamland member. I don't even know what it is, but I'm like, well, that's where the television's going to have to come, right?
Yeah. It's a crazy interweaving puzzle, and it's something they have to figure out. I will tell you, there are ways around not having cable.
Luke already went through broken IP addresses and stealing them like all his friends do in Pennsylvania. Like, literally. I mean, they got that to deal with, too. But at some point, they have to put it in front. The new ownership, and it's 5 days in. You got time, Dave. Team's going to win a lot of games. You got time. But at some point, the way to the promised land of winning is going to be good business.
Yes.
That's I don't want that to be lost in all of this because you don't want to be Tampa Bay. You don't want to be 8,000 people and we win some of the time and we watch all of our players go play for the Yankees. That shouldn't be the goal. It was never the goal when Angelos bought the team. He turned it into that.
Well, let's be clear about this. Good franchises don't hold on to players forever. You don't want, as much as you love Cal Ripken, in this day and age, you don't want a 38-year-old guy running. You know what? 5 38-year-old guys running around because they get hurt and you don't win. So as much as you sign the players that you want to keep, you still have to keep your minor leagues filled. You still have to have spend a crazy amount of money in your scouting department and in your development department to get new guys to replace your players. And this is it. This is a sticking point for Baltimore Orioles fans. We as a fan base have to get more used to letting guys go, because when you hold on to them too long, you get a lot of doddering old players that can't play anymore. So a healthy pipeline of players coming in to replace the people that you love is all the people that I've heard for the last week since they announced that Jackson Holliday wasn't going to break with the team. People have lost their minds about it. Why? He's 20 years old. He's barely played a year in the minor leagues. I don't care how much natural talent he has. He may be the best player that's ever played for the team. It cannot hurt him to spend another month in the minor leagues honing his craft, getting better at playing second base, which he's barely done. Looking at lefties, whether or not he hits a home run in his first at bat against the lefty or not, why is that a bad thing? And by the way, as soon as he gets up here, his clock starts going. And just like Manny Machado, I said this when they did this with Manny Machado, it's like people, as many people as want him to get here now, will be lamenting that he's gone so quickly. And yes, we certainly hope that he signs. But then there are other questions, like Connor Norby's been in the minor leagues for 2-3 seasons now, and he's played very well, particularly in the last year and a half. He was in line first. Should he get a chance to play? Jordan Westberg, Kobe Mayo, these guys.
These are problems this organization's never had. You and I in 30 years have never had these kinds of conversations.
There are other players that we also need to find out about. We sort of know, or we think we know about Jackson Holliday. I want to know what Connor Norby's going to be. They've got him playing the outfield now. He's a second baseman.
The more they show this stuff off, the more they can buy pitching when they need it in July, because they're going to need it.
And to do that, you need positions on the field. And maybe that means Jackson Holliday stays down for a little bit longer. And that's okay. That's okay. It doesn't have to be right now all the time. So there are, as much as all the other things out and around, there are things on the field that have to be decided. Who gets the contracts? How much are we willing to spend? How are we going to keep our pipeline healthy and fluid with young players? We have a wealth of talent right now. How do we give these players an opportunity to either play for the team or be showcased so they can go play for someone else and we can get what we need? And I think the Orioles are going to find out fairly quickly their biggest weakness right now is the bullpen. So yeah, there's a lot to figure out just on the field. Not even not even the myriad of things we've talked about that have nothing to do with the white line between what goes on between the white lines at Camden Yards.
Alan McCallum is here. He will continue to be here. He's been here for 30 years, and I'm not getting rid of him yet. People keep asking me if I'm getting my press credential back. I said, maybe. I don't know. I haven't asked these people. I haven't talked about it. But, you know, part of that for me is also my investment, right, to say, like, all right, they're going to let me come down and ask questions. I probably would have been there Sunday because Luke wasn't there because it was Easter Sunday. Luke goes to a lot of games. I'd love to be a part of it, right? Like, it's that recruitment part of when I met you, there was never a thought that I wouldn't be a part of it, right? Like, sure, how awful these people would be and how long it would go on and how we're old now and gray and I'm going to Air Supply concerts.
Walked me into the clubhouse my first day, introduced me to I think Bill Stetka and some of the various Oriole players. And you walked me into the visiting clubhouse to show me around. You gave me a phone and said, okay, go do it. And that was basically my indoctrination. And then I had to figure it out. So,
Alan, this is Cal. Cal, this is Alan.
Yeah, right. Basically, right. So, yeah,
I probably walked you around and introduced you to every guy in the locker room, right?
I think Chris Hoyles might have been the first person you introduced me to. Yeah, it was a good bunch of guys. That was a good bunch of guys back in that day. But yeah, it's hard to cover a team if you can't get into the clubhouse and on the field. There's no question about that.
Well, I'd like to report on it accurately and with some wisdom and all the years of seeing this. And they either want that or they don't. But I'll be here doing it either way. But it would be a lot more fun to be a part of it. And I made that clear. And I always wanted to be a part of it. But I wasn't – my integrity wasn't going to get dragged into it, as you well know. So Tom Lavero came on last week and told – if you haven't read that piece or seen the piece he did with me about how Andy Van Slyke got here from a night of him out with Angelos, like crazy stuff that happened during that era. But I remember being in the manager's office when Johnny Oates lost his mind because Peter's kids called down and wanted, you know, Chris Sabo benched for Leo Gomez. So feels like yesterday, but it does feel like 30 years ago now. It's all over with Alan, except me opening the prisoner. And that'll happen if I get my press credential back. And look, on April 1st, on Monday, I wasn't going to go out and say anything because, like, it would be perceived as a joke if I said it happened. So even if it happened on Monday, I wouldn't mention it until Tuesday. But I do hope I get to go back. It would be enlightening, and there'd be so much to learn. I talked to Jeff Montgomery this week because he's in town and owns the radio station in Kansas. He's been my friend for 30 years. And I said, sure, to him, there's so much, it's such a different game and the way it's talked about and the way it's, there would be so much for me to learn on the inside if I wanted to do it well again, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Look, I haven't been down there on the regular covering the team in a long time, but yeah, there's no question the world has changed. No question about that.
Oh, the days of the cell phone and the 900 megahertz working and the little box that we gave you, right? Remember all that stuff?
I remember it well.
I got my bill from Bell Atlantic every month for my ballpark phone. 547-6105, I believe, was the number. Look that up. I am Nestor. He is Alan McCallum. Now that baseball's back, I'm going to bother you more often. And, it's a joy to have lived long enough to see whatever the other side of this is going to be and whatever the side of the Inner Harbor and the parking lots and whatever the next thing that's going to be, especially after we lost the bridge last week. I think a lot of us have had to think about these sort of iconic things that they're not forever. And we'll be talking a lot about the resurrection of Baltimore, Maryland, Alan McCallum. So you can find Alan anywhere. He is on social media. He's hiding usually at a show or in D.C. and doing Kennedy Center stuff. I had a person pop up with Kennedy Center honor tickets 2 weeks ago and said, I got one left. And I'm like, figures, I'm in Sarasota today. So, you know, I
think you meant Mark Twain. It's probably Mark Twain.
Was the Mark Twain? Is that what it was?
That's
2 weeks ago?
Yes.
Two weeks ago, Sunday. Was that what it was?
Eight days ago. David Rubenstein was on my stage. 8 days ago with the Mark Twain prize. So
I was in Orlando having lunch with my brother who lives in Orlando and his beautiful daughter and his wife. And I saw on my phone, it's like 4:30 in the afternoon. I have one extra ticket, Kennedy Center Honors. And I'm like, figures I'm in Florida when this goes on, you know, and it wasn't even you, but hey, Mark Twain. Hey, listen, if it's a room, David Rubenstein's in, it's good enough room for me. He owns the Orioles, you know.
I heard that. Let me tell you something. There's something that I enjoy being of both the analog and digital age. I think it gives, in the internet, I guess it's actually the internet age, that having the perspective of both sort of grounds you in a way that I don't know.
Young people should understand it and respect it more. That's all I'm going to say. And that really makes me old, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the fact that I have a Baltimore Colts belt buckle over here and that I lost the football team and I had the owner of the Baltimore Ravens who was once in my home and, you know, I sung his high hosannas literally run from me and the general manager run from me on the porch of the Ritz-Carlton in Orlando, that I've lived long enough for that to happen 2 days after Peter Angelos dies and 2 days before the new owner takes over. And we lost the key bridge in the middle of all of it.
I was up in the middle of the night.
It's been a weird week, Alan. It's been a crazy week, man. That's all I'm going to say.
I was up in the middle of the night. It was 1:30, and I started seeing posts on social media that the key bridge went down. And I certainly haven't gone over it as much as probably some people, but it's been in the background of my life as a Baltimorean, just like everybody else. And to see the tragedy and just the sense that something you think is going to be there forever can be taken away in the blink of an eye is as sobering as anything you can experience. And
I haven't been able to look at it yet. I haven't driven by. I haven't looked up in the sky to see. I haven't been able to do it yet. My plane came in the other way, and I'm kind of. It's been a week almost, and I'm kind of like. It'll come to me. I will be driving over there and I'll lose my ish. I will be the guy pulled over on the side of the road. Sick.
And ultimately the country's going to find out how integral Baltimore is to it because of losing access to that port.
Damn you. An hour into this and you get me choked up. Look at you, what you did to me.
It's an intense experience. No question.
Whew, we got to take a break. I haven't talked about it all day. I've been talking baseball and hope and stuff and April Fool's stuff and music. And did I tell you how good Air Supply was? It was really good. Alan McCallum has been my music friend and my baseball friend for a long, long time. Dude, we got to get together. We got to talk about the Black Sox Memorial thing, too, because I had that going on last month, too. So we're definitely going to do that. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Now that baseball's back, I get to call my baseball nerd friends and nerd out about baseball. We might even go to a game. Stay with us.